You're listening to the We Lead Well podcast, where well-being matters. This episode is brought to you in partnership with Transform Education Coaching, headteacherchat.com and the Teach Well Alliance. Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to another episode of the We Lead Well podcast. I'm Vicky Maguire. I'm an education and leadership coach working with school leaders and teachers to support them to improve their own well-being and that of all of their staff. I also run group coaching programs for women leaders, and I've set up the Women Lead Well Coaching Network to provide a supportive network for female school leaders. Today on the show, I have an interview with Julia Skinner. Now, Julia is so amazing. She's just lovely. She is so supportive of teachers and everybody in education. And she's just great to have a conversation with. She is an education consultant, a trained coach, and a former head teacher. And she's an experienced governor and trustee. And now she supports governing bodies to get the best out of their relationship with head teachers in order to provide the best for the children in their schools. And Julia is very focused on getting the best outcomes for children. But she understands that in order to do that, you have to focus on staff too. And that's really important, because happy staff make happy children. And that is why we do the We Lead Well podcast, because we want to help schools to improve the well-being of their staff so that they can be happy in their jobs. I came across Julia, like I do many of my guests, on Twitter, and I just loved the things that she says to people who've got problems, or they're dealing with issues, or they're struggling. She's just so kind and supportive. And I also really liked what she was saying about listening and the listening ear. So I got her on the show to tell us all about that, and also to tell us about how governors can support schools effectively, and how, as a school leader, you can use your governing body to help you as well, and how you can make that a reciprocal relationship. So here's Julia. Enjoy the interview. Julia Skinner, welcome to the We Lead Well podcast. It's brilliant to have you on. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. Enjoying the sunshine that we've got here in Bristol.
Yes, it's sunny here in Manchester as well. It might be the last opportunity we get to enjoy it this week, I think.
So yes, absolutely.
Caravan in Anglesey at the end of the week. So the reason that I asked you to come on the podcast is because I've seen you on Twitter and I've read your tweets, and I feel like you're very much a supporter of teachers and leaders in schools, and I feel like you bring a lot of positivity to sometimes the negativity that is Twitter, which is why I asked you to come on the podcast. So can you start off by just telling the listeners a little bit about yourself, your career, and what you do now?
Yes, of course. Well, I'm a retired head teacher in Bristol. I had three headships altogether, spanning about just over 13 years, primary. And when I retired, I didn't really have any plans other than to learn to play the piano and do lunch, basically. Well, the piano was under my husband bought me a keyboard, which was under the bed for 10 years. And I decided that doing lunch wasn't good for the figure. But in all seriousness, when I first retired, the first 6 months were absolute hell. I suffer with anxiety, and I suddenly had this void that needed to be filled. And of course, my demons rushed in. I didn't have anything to worry about. You know, I'd gone from 450 children, 60 staff, to my husband, who was perfectly capable of looking after himself. And it was actually Twitter that got me out of the depths of despair that those 6 months were. Friends suggested that I joined, which I did, followed Stephen Fry, which everybody did at that time. that led me into discovering blogging and found some amazing writers out there. And long story short, I became a blogger myself and then moved into the 100 word challenge, which is my blogging online project for youngsters. And it's international. When both hemispheres are working, I can get between 300, 400 entries each week. But it's very, very simple. So that's my blogging. That's where Twitter came in. And I've built a network in order to, my original aim was to build some support for the 100 word challenge. But my Twitter account of the head's office has allowed me to, as you say, support leaders and, just be part of the silliness sometimes. But it's also allowed me to help promote some of the governance work. I'm passionate about governance and the impact it can make on a school when it is effective. And then through the pandemic, I suddenly had this urge to put my head teacher hat on and go and be active and do hand sanitizers and one-way systems. And of course, I wasn't even allowed to go in the buildings. So that's when I just offered what I had, which was time. And so the listening ear was developed. And since probably about May last year, I've probably had about an hour's conversation with about 90 people, which has been amazing. Amazing that people reach out and just want that safe space that, I can offer. And we just chat, and sometimes they've cried, sometimes they've been really excited and want, ideas about their next steps. So during that time, I've been lucky enough to get some training as a coach. I still don't see myself as a coach, really. I'm just somebody who sits and chats. It's been very interesting and keeps me off the settee. I have this fear of being on the settee and never getting up again.
Has your anxiety eased then as a result of these couple of things that you've started to?
Yeah, I mean, it's always there. It's always there. And I've learned to understand that it is always there, that it is an illness I have. But with the support of my amazing husband, who recognises the triggers and has, plan A, B. Sometimes we plan right the way down to Z. I'm gradually beginning to understand. I mean, I hit 70 in January, so it's about time I got some idea of it. But there, it still comes back. It's not very far away. But as I say, I'm learning to deal with it. But it does mean that when I'm supporting school leaders, although they, it's not going to be classified as anxiety, the feelings are all the same. Those feelings of imposter syndrome and fear and, all of that stuff that just takes your breath away, as well as makes your tummy turn. When I say I've been there and done it, I do feel that is right. And it means that quite often when I'm talking to people, we can shortcut a lot of the explanations and what ifs, but it is who I am. I'm only just beginning to understand it. There are lots of times when I don't like me at all. And people find that really strange. I'm one of life's swans. Without being beautiful, but above everything is fine, below paddling like heck.
I'm smiling because I identify with so many of the things you're saying. I think I've shared on the show before that I suffer from generalized anxiety disorder. So I've had CBT, cognitive behavior therapy, which I found particularly useful. I think that teaching or leadership in a school is not the best for people who suffer from anxiety, because you are constantly being judged on future. You're going to be judged on future events, and anxiety is all about worrying about things that are going to happen in the future, isn't it? So
yeah,
it's your results, you know, your GCSE results, your SATs results, and Ofsted, yeah, a looming Ofsted inspection. That was the biggest anxiety-inducing thing for me, was thinking about Ofsted. When Ofsted came in, it was fine, and you know, we were okay. But in terms of jobs, it is a very difficult job if you suffer from anxiety, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we're performers all the time, even without any of the accountability. We're performers for our young people. But I think also we are very adept at catastrophizing. We're never any good at taking on the positives. You know, you do something marvelous and you have six people say how fabulous it was, and then one isn't so complimentary, and you only ever think about that one. Whereas people in other industries and professions just ignore that one. But we don't. I don't know what it is about educationalists that are like that. And then, having concentrated on that one negative, we then catastrophize it. We then make it so much worse. And then we go down the what if road. And before we know where we are, we're so uptight, we can't breathe. You know, it sort of gets in your chest and you can't breathe. And I think it's quite interesting when you said that you think it's a profession that, you know, anxious people would find tricky because of the accountability. And I think that is so sad. You know, when I became a teacher, I always wanted to be a teacher. I was always very bossy. My neighbours, you know, the kids around the block, they would always have to sit in front in rows. I was always at the front. They were always in rows. And it was just something I wanted to do. And as I went into teaching, I just wanted to have that opportunity to see those little buttons blossom. Somewhere along the line, we've brought it in that it is a profession that is accountable. And the people we're accountable to are the children, but we've become a profession that's accountable to grown-ups, and that has put such a pressure on us, on everybody, that it can be really hard to see the wood from the trees and to really focus on the youngsters. And I really hope, I don't know, my positivity is lessening with each day, but I really hoped that the pandemic would allow us to go back to the education that I was going to say Enid Blyton, but that might be a bad word somewhere, but just about fun. School should be fun for the littles and the bigs, and it should be about learning, it should be about adventures, and I'm still hopeful that perhaps that accountability, where we make the children feel accountable. By the time they get to year six, you know, they're worrying about their SATs. Well, for goodness sake, that is just not on. That is dreadful. Whether or not we'll be able to bring that kindness back, whether or not we'll, you know, a couple of the schools that I'm supporting, they found out a lot about their communities during the pandemic that they were completely unaware of. And that hopefully, as we move forward, that will really help that widening of what school is for. So I just think it is so sad that we've allowed our profession to be hijacked in some ways.
I very clearly remember talking about this, the feelings of dread that I would get as exam results day came closer, and how freeing it's been for me as an anxiety sufferer, leaving a school and not having that day looming over my entire summer and not being able to escape that feeling of dread in my stomach every time I thought about the results. I also thought that when we were coming out of the pandemic, I thought going back to school in September, because, you know, dealing with staff in schools, it's been a horrendous time in schools to go through. And I thought perhaps from September things would ease off, but the impression that I'm getting from the people I'm having conversations with is that actually I think people are just as tired as they were, if not more tired, than before the summer holidays, and that things aren't actually getting better. They seem to be getting worse. Is that your experience as well?
I don't know about worse, but they're certainly not improving as we would have hoped. I think as education, the thing that education always has to have is structure. You know, we're full of timetables, you know, in some schools it's bells, and even now, having retired for quite a few years, we still run our lives to term times and all that sort of thing. So we are creatures of habit. And I think one of the biggest things that affected everybody's confidence and well-being was that lack of structure during the pandemic. You know, I don't feel that the guidance, we had so much guidance. At one point we didn't have any, and then we had so much guidance, you didn't know, you know, which of the documents to take any notice of. Obviously, when it's a virus, we've got no control over that. We don't know when it's coming in, when it's not coming in. And I think what we all hoped was to have the summer holiday just to regroup, build our energies, so that when we came back in September, there wouldn't be quite the restrictions that we'd had before as far as the pandemic was concerned. And of course, what seems to have happened is that the restrictions have been taken away, but of course the virus is still there. And actually, you need both. If you've got the virus, you need restrictions. So I know there are some colleagues who are still very nervous, still finding it very stressful with the number of positive cases they've got. You know, again, it was a huge task to expect schools to do the track and tracing. But once we got up and running with it, you couldn't fault it. Schools were on it. They knew exactly what to do. Now they've been told, you know, there isn't that same need, and yet the virus is still there. So I think that's where the tiredness is coming from, the fact that you can't make those plans. And it's a shame, because we keep delaying it. You know, perhaps after Christmas it will be all right, and perhaps, you know, this time next year it'll be all right. But of course, alongside all of that, teachers just get on and do it. School leaders just get on and do it. We are a great profession for looking at the situation and saying, right, okay, that's not what I would have chosen, but that's what I've got. Let's get on with it. And thank goodness for it.
The resilience that schools have shown is amazing, isn't it? I spoke to heads, you know, I was speaking to heads months ago, thinking, I don't know how these head teachers are going to get through this. I thought we might, you know, see swathes of head teachers, you know, having to take time off, and actually they haven't. They've been so resilient, haven't they? And managed to cope and get through everything. I think you're right there, that the structure being taken away has put lots of pressure on schools, because they still have to have some sort of system to deal with the virus that's still there in schools, don't they? And now the pressure is on them to have their own systems and to be sort of working within their own organisations. What advice would you give to head teachers at this time? If you could give them any advice, what would it be?
To be confident that you know your community. You know, the parent body in my school would be completely different to the parent body in your school. We would need to deal with them differently. And I think what I would say to heads is just be brave, you know, to pick up the Women Ed phrase, be 10% braver. and really sit down with your staff and analyse what is best for your community, what is best for those children in front of you. Now that and you can do that more readily because there aren't those restrictions coming from government. But of course, what quite often when you're given restrictions and you're told, right, this is what you've got to do, this is what you've got to do, when that is taken away, it can feel a bit like blancmange. So, you know, start putting your own structures in and just be confident that, you know what's best for your school and community, and be, you know, almost write it down, be ready to say, well, this is what we've done and this is why we've done it.
So you are an expert in governance, Julia, aren't you? And I'm really interested in the role that governors can play in supporting headteachers and well-being. But to start off, before we get into the sort of governance issue, what do you think well-being means in terms of schools? What does well-being mean to you? We're having a little discussion about it, weren't we? Prior to us starting recording, and I was saying that I feel sometimes now that the term well-being, it's become overused, and it's almost like it's been lost in translation. There's no sort of clear interpretation of exactly what it means in a school. So what does it mean to you?
Well, well-being, it is an overused phrase at the moment. It feels almost like a bandwagon that people feel they need to get on. For me, well-being is about the culture in the school. And I actually think the best time to talk about well-being is when everything is going well and everybody, you know, there aren't those pressures. So that when a crisis does come along, you can just up the ante with what is needed. I think well-being actually is about valuing all the people in your school, appreciating them, showing them respect. Yes, there are times when crises happen and people need a little bit of extra TLC. But well-being is very much more than TLC when it comes to the whole establishment. And as far as governors are concerned, it's really important that governors understand that it isn't just something that they can put some money to. It is about looking at the culture. Does everybody here feel valued? Do, you know, whether it's a little child, we always try to make sure that all the children feel valued. We need to do that with the grown-ups as well. And I think that's when in well-being, we won't be talking about well-being then. It will just be, you know, the whole culture of the establishment. And I've got a concern about coaching as well, because well-being is leading to a huge plethora of coaching and all sorts of coaching, mentoring types of initiatives. I think it could then become a burden. There could be school leaders that feel they have to go on a coaching course, which is an extra, you know, something extra for them to consider. And governors may feel, right, well, we've got to support our leaders by sending them on a coaching course or providing a coach for them. Whereas it's actually understanding the nature of coaching and the nature of mentoring and how that fits with the being feeling well and good. It, you know, if you reverse those words, rather than having well-being, it's about a being who feels well and valued. So it's, you know, it's quite exciting. There are lots of windows of opportunity, but it's really important that we don't make them bandwagons that people feel they have to jump on.
It's really interesting that you say that, because I've been concerned about that with the, yes, I appreciate the government's wellbeing charter in education, and that's great. Potentially a little bit toothless, maybe, but you know, that's a separate issue. The problem with it is that people on senior leadership teams are being given the responsibility now, an extra responsibility of well-being. So you can take on the responsibility of, oh, see what the well-being culture is and see what we can do about it. And the irony of that is that you're actually adding exponentially to the workload of some senior leaders. So what's your answer to that? Is there an answer to it? And I'm not sure.
Well, it's the whole approach. It's the mindset that well-being isn't something we can go and buy. It isn't something you can take off a shelf. It is very personal to each individual, which is why it has to be based on the culture of the establishment. And, you know, you can't have one person in charge of well-being for the rest of the establishment. It has to come from everybody. And for me, it can be led by the Board of Governors, you know, by them understanding what the vision is of the school, what the values are of the school, you know, the new Ofsted framework. I've mentioned the O word there. The new Ofsted framework is very much about the curriculum. It's about the intent of the curriculum. What do you want your little buttons or your big buttons to know by the time they've left your establishment? So it is all about that tapestry that is a school. And right the way through that is well-being, is how people feel. Do all the teachers want to come in every day, even on a Monday? You know, do all the children really enjoy most of their lessons? We can't get them to love all of them. Are the parents happy with the way their children are being educated, are having that exciting adventure that education should be? That is the whole tapestry of it. And so it is really important, if you have the board who understands that, then it is something that sort of permeates all the way through. It sort of seeps through like gold dust. And so I do think, you know, we need to make sure, you know, it's no good. Yeah, it's good to have a charter, but it is very easy to type it out, put it on fancy paper, stick it on the wall, and for it to have no effect at all.
Before we find out more from Julia about how you can make sure well-being isn't just a tick box exercise in your school, I'd like to tell you a little bit about our partner, Head Teacher Chat. Head Teacher Chat discusses lots of topics, from how to support pupils with learning, how to support parents, and the many issues that come with leading a school. The aim of Head Teacher Chat is to support head teachers and school leaders who are in a challenging and often lonely role. They do this by offering lots of information for schools to tap into. For example, they have lots of fantastic education companies on their database for leaders to discover, as well as leadership templates to download. They've written product reviews for leaders who are looking for products for their school. And this year, they've even launched the very first school leader planner, especially designed to help leaders to be productive and organised. If you'd like to hear more about Head Teacher Chat, you can find them on their website at www.headteacherchat.com. Head Teacher Chat, it's what head teachers are talking about. Now let's get back to the interview.
So I do think that is a role for governors to actually unpick what well-being means to them in their establishments.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It's individual, it's unique to a school and the culture of the school. And it's about conversation as well. From what you're saying there, it's about, as governors, do you understand your school and its culture? And actually, are you really understanding what's at the heart of it? The worry for me is that when it becomes part of, you know, we were talking before, weren't we, about accountability, and it becomes part of Ofsted's agenda. My concern is that it becomes a tick box exercise, and that schools think, like you're saying, either you can buy it in, or as long as you've got a member of SLT who's responsible for it, they'll be the person who speaks to Ofsted and whatever. And then you talk as well about the coaching is a big thing at the minute, and I believe in coaching. You know, I think it's a very good way of supporting staff to understand why they do what they do, and enabling them to really enjoy what they do and feel the purpose in it. But like you're saying, if that's a system that's being imposed upon staff, like we're all going to do coaching because it's great for well-being, then it doesn't work like that, does it? So no. How can we make sure that well-being doesn't become a tick box exercise? I think one of the things that you do is the listening ear, isn't it? And one of the things that I've heard you say before is, you know, sometimes you don't necessarily need coaching as long as people are listened to. And it sounds like that's important.
And I think to unpick some of the things you said, you've mentioned about Ofsted. Ofsted won't be going in with a box that says well-being. Is the well-being of this school good? They will know as soon as they walk through the door. You know, when I was a head teacher, primary head, my year five parents would come and see me and say, oh, Mrs. Skinner, I don't know what school to send him to. I don't know what to do. What do you think's best? And my advice to them was to go to as many secondary schools as they could manage to get their child to and just walk through the door and stop and smell and listen and look. And you know straight away, you know, that this is a warm establishment. This is a kind establishment. It's in that atmosphere. So I think that is, you know, we don't have to worry about it being imposed from the top. I mean, you know, goodness knows. I mean, how would you judge well-being? So I think also, I'm lost my thread now. We were talking about Ofsted, and then you said about the listening ear. Yes, my listening ear is just that. I listen. And as you will know, as a coach, it's having that opportunity to say out loud what is in your head. By verbalising things, you have to put it in sentences most of the time. You know, some of the times we struggle, don't we, with some of our words. But when you're verbalising something to someone, you're putting them into sentences, you're making rational, all that sort of snow, you know, those little balls that you could shake up at Christmas and all the snow is going. Sometimes that's how we feel, particularly as school leaders, when you've got all of that coming to you. The opportunity to just sit and verbalise to someone in a reasonable order, helped by their questions, allows you to actually unmuddle all of that thinking. And it isn't the skill of the coach as such. I worked with somebody today and it was lovely. The comments she made were lovely, but actually I only asked a couple of questions. She did all the thinking. She did all the talking. And as a positive person, I believe that everybody has the answer inside them. They just need different ways of getting to that answer. And it's exactly the same when you're working with the children. You know, some children, give them a piece of paper and some crayons and they'll get there. Others give them a computer. Others give them a calculator. You know, we go out of our way to try and find the way for youngsters to be able to achieve. And we just need to give our senior leaders, well, everybody. I mean, I'm really keen on the idea of promoting coaching, listening ear type things for governors, particularly to chairs, because it has been very, very hard for chairs. And of course, they don't even get paid. Not that most of us would want to be paid, but there is that element. And so I think there is an opportunity for that chance of offloading or just verbalising to someone else, someone who perhaps has been there, seen it, done it, will know what you're talking about, can possibly give you a little bit of a guide here or there, or just let you empty whatever it is inside of you.
I think it's really important, possibly in teaching more than other professions, because you spend so long on your own every day, don't you? Even if you're a senior leader and you're in your office a lot of the time, and you possibly don't get that chance, like people who work in offices over the coffee machine, or even when you just sit in the same office and talking to each other and offloading, you don't get the same opportunity to do that in teaching and school leadership, do you?
No, I mean, being a school leader is one of the loneliest jobs you can have. But you're right, even to a class teacher, you spend most of the day with people younger than yourself. So you are not going to have those grown-up lessons. And sometimes we lose the ability to have those grown-up lessons, those grown-up conversations. I think sometimes that's why the 6 weeks is, you know, by the time you get to the end of the 6 weeks holiday, you're a bit more coherent to adults than you are when you first start off. But it is an opportunity. That is a recognition that needs to be out there. And, you know, to provide that opportunity. But it's making sure that when it's offered, it's not offered as a panacea for all your problems. It's not offered as a panacea to the problems of the school. You know, the school is in, requires improvement. Right, we'll send the head on a coaching course. It's about understanding, as I said before, it's understanding what coaching and mentoring is and the vehicle that it is. And allowing people to say, yeah, I'd like some of that. Because the other thing is, not everybody's ready to be coached or mentored. You know, people have to be in the right place for it to be beneficial to them, I think.
Coaching can sometimes be, I mean, I've so many sessions where people have got very upset during coaching. It's very introspective. You have to really look at yourself, and sometimes it's difficult to see what you see in yourself, because it makes you admit to those things that you probably don't like about yourself sometimes. In order to do something about it, I think it's very powerful, because it makes you look at those things and say, right, okay, I'll accept that. What can I do about it? I think one of the reasons why I have found the Women Leaders Group coaching programs that I run so powerful, because they are a space. I think the women who've done those programs have found that they are a space, like you're saying, where they can come and talk about things that are going on for them, whatever that might be. But also, I think what that offers as well, the network and that creating that supportive network, is that also offers another perspective as well. They get that opportunity. I think that's something that I missed as a head of department and probably a senior leader, was being able to be part of a network of other people in a similar position to me, where I could go and say, well, this has happened or that's happened, I'm not sure about this, and then actually hear other people's perspectives, to know I'm not on my own, that I'm not feeling this, that it's not just me, that there are other people who are experiencing something similar, and that you can then work together to come up with some solutions. And I think in terms of coaching, it's an opportunity to do it on a broader scale.
Yeah, I think it's, you're right there in that you mentioned solutions. It's about those solution focused conversations. It's about, yes, having the opportunity to verbalize, offload, rant if necessary, but then to actually say, right, okay, so what are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
You know, and to offer, I think, once you formalize it, even to the listening ear, it is about offering that blue sky, which is why I say not everybody's ready for it. You know, you have to be at that point, A, almost when you've got a bit of a dilemma, but B, where you're feeling strong enough to find some solutions that are very proactive, that you can control.
Why do you think that coaching could be so powerful for governors? I know we do have governors who listen to the show. And if they're thinking about potentially having some coaching, what would you say are the benefits of that? If a governor wants to do it, what are the reasons that they could, you know, give for undertaking a course of coaching?
I think anything that, you know, we're human beings and we thrive on relationships, but sometimes those relationships don't go well. So it's always useful to have a listening ear when things aren't going well. But I think for governors, many of them aren't educationalists. And as we touched on in our conversation, education can be a really weird place, a really weird world that, you know, some people really, and it can be really difficult for them to get their heads around it. I'm somebody who I'm a terribly impatient person. So, you know, wait and see, as a girl, wait and see was a dreadful phrase for my parents to use, because I did find wait and see very difficult. And I think to a certain extent, and I think possibly it is because of my age, I don't really want to have to wait and see. So when it comes to governance, you know, yes, if you're a governor and you work through it for about 3-4 years, well, you know, that's fine. But what about John in year 4 or Mary in year 8? They need some solutions now. They need their governing board to be effective now. And the governors need to be able to work with the leadership team, support the leadership team now. And whilst I can't, you know, provide everybody with some coaching, I think it is very useful for particularly a chair who has a number of different plates that are spinning, again, to have that opportunity of just verbalising, because being the chair of a governing board can be as lonely as being a head teacher, having done both. I can say that, because who does the chair talk to without causing problems of, you know, oh, she favours her, or that's getting clicky. I think also we've got a window of opportunity for governors and coaching because they're used to the phrases now. You know, 18 months, 2-3 years ago, governors wouldn't have known about coaching. They wouldn't known about mentoring. That's something that, you know, senior leaders do. Now they know a lot more about it. Sometimes they're being asked to fund it. So they are there, they understand the vocabulary. And I think it's also a way of identifying that they are leaders. You know, they are part of the school leadership team and really need, you know, a support that is in a similar format. I do feel that the coach needs to have some understanding of governance as well as an understanding of coaching. But I think it would be, you know, really useful for governors to just be able to dip in, maybe not have a, you know, series of 6 sessions or whatever, just to dip in and say, have I actually got this right? You know, it's interesting. I had a meeting this morning with one of my governors, and he's my co-chair. I'm stepping down at Easter, and he's going to become the chair. And he said to me, right, before we go, what do you see that I don't? And I thought, gosh, that's a really good question. He's not an educationalist, so therefore a lot of what I see is going to be about education. And I thought, yeah, that's really interesting, because what he was wanting was to get to the place of being an effective chair quicker than him finding out what it is that I see that he doesn't see. I just think that has some potential.
And also, I could see coaching for governors working at different points or pivotal points. You know, for example, if you're appointing a new head teacher, it might be really good to have some coaching in terms of, you know, how you're going to go about the process, what you're looking for in your head teacher, what are the school's values, how will you, you know, how will you make sure your values are aligned with your new head teachers? So I suppose there are, you know, you're saying maybe you dip in and out of it at times, and it could be at sort of pivotal points, or, you know, if you've got an Ofsted that's imminent, you could have that those conversations at pivotal points, would you say?
Yeah, it's about, you know, finding out what's keeping people awake at night. And, you know, let me assure you, governors, particularly chairs of governors, spend lots of sleepless nights. But you're right. So in the same way as we've now got the early career framework, and, you know, there is an expectation that ECTs will get some coaching. If you, when you become a governor, you should have a form of induction, but possibly 2 years, you know, when you've been a governor for a couple of years, when you've got those questions and you just want some clarification, that would be very useful. If you're considering becoming a chair, you know, what things will I, yes, it's very easy to read the, you know, the manual that says this is what you do as a chair, but when you put people into it, that can change it. Rather, like, you know, there is a list for head teachers and plans, but as soon as you put children in, then it can be skewed. So you're right. I think there are, and then so we've got the early governor, we've got those that want to progress, and then we've got those that are established in their role that possibly feel I'm getting a bit stale. I need to move things on. You know, just that opportunity of sharing what's inside their head, but being told that actually we appreciate what you're doing to the point that we're going to recommend you have some coaching. You know, your head teacher is doing some coaching. This is because there's, you know, there's so much good work that is done by governors that goes completely unnoticed. And sometimes, you know, a pat on the back in the form of how about doing some coaching would go a long way, I think.
I mean, I've served on three governing bodies, I think, as a staff governor and a parent governor. And I totally identify with what you're saying. I can see all those different sort of pictures and scenarios on the different governing bodies that I've been part of. And actually, governors want to do the best job that they can, don't they? Mm. And sometimes coaching can just give you that little bit of an edge, just to push you outside your comfort zone a little bit and just improve that little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just there's so many questions that I could ask you, but just as a final thing, how do you think, what one of the things we're talking about is governors and that they want to do the best job that they can for schools. Some governing bodies that I've worked with, I've found have not had the impact that they potentially could have because they've not, I don't really know how to describe this. You probably know what I mean, that they've not pushed enough sometimes in meetings. They've not really delved deeper into things that potentially they should. Mm. But at the same time, there's a balancing act between a governing body that wants to be supportive of the senior leadership team and the head teacher and the school, but at the same time has a responsibility to the children to provide the best education possible. But also, like you're saying, taking into account that you've got to look after the well-being and create that culture in your school. And as a governor, you have a significant responsibility in that. How would you advise governors to take on that role of that being supportive, but helping a school to develop and improve at the same time?
I think it, I mean, there is the phrase, you know, critical friend. I don't like that. I don't like either side of that, but it is about understanding very clearly what your role is, and that needs understanding by the senior leadership team as well. You know, governors don't do the doing, but they have to check that the people that are doing the doing correctly. And so it's about having that strategic view, that umbrella view. And it is about asking those questions. And quite often, the best questions are the simple ones. Questions like, why do we do it like that? Or tell me a bit more about that. Because as a head, I know those simple questions are the ones that make me stop and think.
Yeah.
If they are very, you know, so what were the SATs results? That's easy. You know, I can tell you that. But when somebody is asking about, you know, approaches, cultures, all that sort of thing, it does mean that I need to stop and think, and I then need to verbalise it. It's quite interesting because there is a, you know, a side with coaching again.
Yeah.
So for that to work, governors need to understand that that is their role. Their role is to ask questions. And it is the leadership's role to understand that that's what they're there for. And that if they ask a question, they aren't criticising. They are trying to find out more information for them to do their role. And I think quite often I know that the best relationships are those that fully understand what each part of it is doing. So I didn't want to use the word sides, but that's, you know, what each partner does. The leadership is there to do all the operational things. The governors are there to check that the operational things are successful and are the right operational things. I think that's sometimes where governors don't think, because they're not educationists. They think, well, we can't ask, well, why have you done that? Well, yes, you can, because that's what you're there for. You've probably been selected and elected because you're not an educationist.
Yeah,
those of us in education are really good at just narrowing and never lifting our heads up. Yeah.
Governors bring a different perspective on your organisation, don't they? Because they've worked in a, you know, sometimes someone who works in a commercial organisation can bring some insight or perspective on the way that you're doing something in a school, a process, or, you know, your operational management and how that's not effective. And they might have a different solution or answer to that problem. Might they? I think that for me is the power of governors. That was the thing when I was on a governing body. I was always really interested in that perspective that a businessman could bring to the table in terms of you know, financing and resource management and things like that, and that commercial awareness that we often don't have as school leaders. I think some schools do it really well and some senior leadership teams have that risk management, financial planning, you know, they've the commercial awareness, but I think in a lot of schools senior leadership teams are lacking in that knowledge and experience. That's where governors can bring some, you know, really useful ideas and experience to the table, can't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And when you're a head and a chair, you go out of your way to appoint people with these particular skills. You know, we want somebody with finance, we want somebody with HR. And then we don't actually make any use of them when they're sat round the table. I put my hand up for that. I made sure that, you know, the recommendations were that you had a finance. I did it all. And there was one point in my headship career where I had all of those categories of skills, but we never made any use of it. We just carried on doing the same old, same old. So I think it is about utilising the skills. But in order to do that, you have to give those governors the confidence. And that comes through being trusted, being able to say, you know, give their ideas, and for those ideas to be received positively, perhaps not necessarily adopted, but not to be received by the senior leadership as, oh, they don't think we're doing it right. They want us to change things. Well, no, they're just putting something forward that, you know, we might like to consider.
I think it's the idea as well, isn't it, of it being reciprocal in its nature. That, you know, as a leadership team, if you are lacking experience in a particular area, you can go to a governor and say, I need some help with this, how have you gone about it, what, so that things work both ways. And I think I don't know the term critical friend. I can see what your issue is, because being critical of someone, you know, even if you're there, I don't like it when my friend criticizes me, I take offense. No. So like if a governor, you know, and you're not friends, are you?
No,
really.
No.
But the idea that it can be reciprocal at times as well is really important, isn't it?
Yes.
Sometimes I think senior leadership teams in a governor's meeting feel like they're under pressure to prove themselves, or they're being tested.
Yes.
Where in actual fact, you want that relationship where you feel like you can have questions asked of you and be challenged, but also you can ask questions and get support as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I wouldn't like to give Ofsted the credit, but the idea of being a governor and asking questions is to do those deep dives, is to ask a bit more information. And I think that the key to building that relationship between the board and the leadership team is to always think about the children. So at the end of the meeting, to be able to say, right, how has these 2 hours improved the lot of John in year four? I always use John in year four or Mary in year eight, because that's what it's all about. And actually, if those 2 hours hasn't improved things for them, then what was the point of you all meeting? Whether you're a leadership team or whether you're a member of the board. And I think when people remember that and think about the children, that's when things can really blossom. They forget about, you know, sides. They forget about being the expert. And they just somehow, all of those walls and all of those barriers just dissolve. And the children and the pupils then become the focus.
And that's why we're in it. That's why we're
in
it. But we have to be happy as well to be doing it. Not, maybe not happy, but we have to be content in our roles and what we're doing. And that's why well-being is important, because contented, satisfied teachers, you know, teach the children better. Thank you so much for joining us, Julie. It's just me. Like you were saying, you're doing lots of things on Twitter with your listening ear in the head's office. And I know some people come to you and, you know, if they've got a problem, you're very supportive. So how can people find you if they want to?
Twitter is the first and foremost one. So it's at the head's office on Twitter. I've got a LinkedIn account. I've got a couple of Facebook accounts as well, or they can always email me. It's very simple. It's jskinner675@gmail.com. And no question is an inane question. There's no such thing as an inane question when you're a governor or when you're a senior leader talking to a coach. You know, we need to stop. We need to get rid of this, you know, feeling that we're going to be accountable. If you talk to me, you're not accountable at all.
Great, because sometimes people just want to ask that question, don't they? And not have someone thinking, why are you asking that such a ridiculous question? So now you are just going to get people emailing you with all the ridiculous questions, Julia. So good
that's
luck with answering all
that's
those over
fine.
Next, over
I
next
suppose-
week or so.
I suppose the network I have, if I don't know the answer, I probably know a man who does, or a woman who does, or a child who does. So, I'd be delighted to support in any way.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a good day.
Okay.
I would say thank you to Julia for joining us today. I know she's retired, but she's still exceptionally busy. So I want to say thank you to her for squeezing us into her very packed schedule. I'd loved having that conversation with Julia. She's just a wealth of knowledge, especially about governing bodies. I think there's some really, really useful information that you can take there for how you can work better with your governing body. There are also a few other things that Julia talks about. Listening has to be the key thing that she talks about here in terms of well-being, that people want to be listened to and they need somewhere to go where they can just talk to someone sometimes. So that's a key thing to take away and think about potentially. How can you find that in your school? How can you offer that to staff? Not necessarily coaching, because obviously that is the ideal, but it can be expensive. Unless you access my group coaching programs or the We Lead Well coaching network, which is much more affordable. But joking aside, having a coach is expensive, but just listening to people can make a big difference in terms of well-being. The other thing that I think Julia said that was really important, and it's really important to take away, is being confident that you know your community and how your community works. And that really means getting to know the people you work with, your staff, your pupils, your parents, and understanding what the key features of your community are and how you can get the best out of them and what they need from you to give their best. That's really important. She also talks about valuing, appreciating and showing respect, key things that keep coming up on the podcast week after week. The other thing I felt that she said that was important is evaluate your well-being in good times. So that's really important. Think about that. And she also said that well-being can be led by the governing body. And I know there are governors who listen to the programme. And she said some really important things about how governors can support well-being in schools. And also some things about how governors can be more effective. And asking questions is one of the important things that she said. And that idea of building a relationship with your senior team, with your head teacher, and always thinking about the children. And at the end of a meeting, and I think this applies to SLT meetings as well, because a lot of the time I feel SLT meetings can be unfocused and not really get down to the nitty-gritty of what needs to be done to have an impact on the pupils. So asking this question at the end of a governor's meeting or an SLT meeting, I think could really make the difference and really make you start to think about how useful and relevant your meetings have been. And that question was, how have these 2 hours, 1 hour, however long your meeting was, improved the opportunities for our children? And that to me is really key to any meeting that takes place in a school. It's very, very important. So thanks to Julia. I have now opened the applications for my January group coaching programme. So if you are interested in the group coaching programme for January, please do get in touch with me. You can get in touch with me on LinkedIn. You can get in touch through the We Lead Well podcast on Twitter, or you can find the We Lead Well group on Facebook. I would love you to join that. And then you can message me on there to find out more. Also look out for the flyer on Twitter. I will be posting that imminently. And I would love it if you would join the Women Lead Well coaching network that I have set up to create a supportive network for female leaders in schools. I feel like that was something that was missing when I was a head of department, assistant head, deputy head in my school. And I really would have valued a network where I could just share everything, share what I was feeling about my role, ask questions about what other people do, gain advice, share good practice. So if you would like to join that network, I am offering 50% off the price of that for anyone who joins before the end of October. So if you want 50% off the price of joining the network, get in there early, message me again via any of the methods that I've just told you about, and get in there first and get 50% off. Well, that is all we've got time for today. Thanks again to Julia for a really insightful interview, and I look forward to speaking to you next time. Take care of yourself, take care of your staff, and lead well. This episode of the We Lead Well podcast was brought to you in partnership with Transform Education Coaching, headteacherchats.com, and the Teach Well Alliance.